It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by on-camera and voiceover talent RodHunter.com and the law offices of Matthew Simone. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist Bob Siegel.
Okay, let's take a break from the horrible news today. It is the holiday season after all, and I like to talk about Christmas this time of the year. As anybody who watches TV around this time of the year knows, it's very common to repeat these annual holiday classics. One of them is The Wizard of Oz. It comes from MGM Studios. It's one of the classic MGM musicals. It was filmed in 1939. The movie that made Judy Garland famous, the movie that made the song Over the Rainbow famous. Interestingly enough, there is not one rainbow ever shown in the movie. But it also starred Burt Lahr, Frank Morgan, Jack Haley, and Ray Bolger, an extremely talented cast. Now here's a question. Why do they show it so much this time of the year? They used to show it annually, first at Christmas time, then at Easter time. But over the years, The Wizard of Oz became associated with Christmas. I'm not exactly sure why. It certainly is not a Christmas story. The word Christmas is not mentioned anywhere. It is a fantasy. It is about family, and you certainly can see marching soldiers. There's even a scene where Dorothy and her friends are asleep in the poppy fields, and the good witch of the north sends snow to wake them up. So yeah, there's snow, but I don't really consider this a Christmas movie. I don't. And for that reason, if you followed my reviews, you will not find this film on my list of top 10 Christmas classic movies and videos. I do, however, love the movie in its own right, and it is on a different top 10 list of mine, my top 10 list of movies for all time, a much higher honor. In fact, it's second on the list, second only to The Sound of Music. Yes, I'm a sucker for musicals, and I know a lot of guys don't like musicals, and I do. Live with it. But again, this movie was on my mind today because it is on TV practically every day. It's being shown on TNT as one of their classic holiday movies. In fact, they're showing it as part of what they call their winter break. Now, I'm going to get back to that in a moment because something really frustrating happens with this station and the way they show The Wizard of Oz. But let me get back to the movie itself first. One of the very interesting features of The Wizard of Oz is that the first 20 minutes or so are in black and white, more accurately put, sepia tone, but we'll just call it black and white. And then after the cyclone lifts up Dorothy's house and she steps out and steps into Munchkinland, the land of Oz, it turns to color. I first saw this movie when I was 6 years old. We did not own a color TV. I had never seen color TV. My Uncle Frank, who always had the latest gadget when we were visiting them in St. Paul, Minnesota, he did have a color TV. And I experienced color TV for the first time when Dorothy walked out that door into the land of Oz. It was beautiful. It was breathtaking. Now, I fell in love with the story and for years growing up continued watching it on black and white. It was many, many, many years later as an adult that I finally saw the color portions again. But that's the hallmark originality of this movie, starting in black and white, turning to color when she steps out the door of her house in the Munchkin Land. It's a very effective process. So what does TNT do with it as they're repeating it every year as part of their winter break? Well, first, they show the scenes in black and white, and right after the house lands, right before Dorothy's about to step out, they go to a commercial break. Then they return. You still see a little bit of black and white. She walks into Munchkin Land, but the moment it turns color, they put this big hunk of writing on the screen, reminding us that we're watching TNT's winter break. What kinds of morons, what kinds of complete total idiots at the station make those kinds of decisions? It's like painting a mustache on the Mona Lisa. This is art, brilliant art. Leave it alone, you dopes. Anyway, now that I was able to vent a little bit, thank you for allowing me to do that. Let me talk about the film itself, and let me start with the book that it comes from. It's based on a brilliant novel by L. Frank Baum. Little bit of trivia. He did a lot of his writing at the Hotel Dell. Back when they used to have a museum there, you could see pictures of him even reading to children. And he designed the chandeliers of the Crown Room. I've gone, being a writer myself, and written my own fiction at the Hotel Dell just for the thrill of knowing I was writing in the same place as L. Frank Baum. I know that doesn't make a hill of beans of difference to the quality of what I'm writing, but as a writer, I found that quite a fun experience, quite special. His book, while written for children, was actually a satire on American politics. You see that more in the book, but a couple of lines from the book did survive for the film. You're familiar with a few of them. Dorothy asks the Scarecrow, "How can you talk if you don't have a brain?" He says, "I don't know, but some people without brains do an awful lot of talking." One of the most brilliant lines ever put in a movie. And then when they discover that the wizard isn't really a wizard, that he's just some con artist that accidentally found his way to Oz when a wind blew his helium balloon over, Dorothy says, "Oh, you're a very bad man." He says, "No, my dear, I'm a very good man. I'm just a very bad wizard." And I love that commentary because we expect politicians to be wizards and they're just men. They're fallible, but we don't always feel that way because they're usually very good at giving speeches and sometimes they're voted on because of their looks, their charisma. Now, while some of it is the same, there are striking differences between the book and the movie. In the movie, we find out at the end that Dorothy was actually dreaming. It's actually hinted on anyway when she gets hit on the head and they do this blurry effect. I don't like it when I watch something and find out that people were actually dreaming. I usually feel very cheated. It worked somehow in this movie, maybe because I first saw it as a kid, but it's so emotionally impactful that you feel like she really went through it. Well, in the book, she really did go through it. She wasn't dreaming. Her house really was picked up in a cyclone. It was taken to the Land of Oz. Some of it's similar. She goes down the yellow brick road. She meets her friends, the Scarecrow, the Tin Woodman, the Cowardly Lion. Oz is really a phony. Oz escapes in a helium balloon that he was going to take Dorothy along in. But they have a lot of adventures after that, and there are actually two good witches. She meets the Witch of the North in Munchkinland, but it's the Witch of the South that finally tells her she could get home by clicking her heels together. That was combined as one character in the movie. And there's silver slippers in the book. They're not ruby slippers. They go to all kinds of other places. They take the cap that can summon the winged monkeys to give them three wishes, the winged monkeys that were working for the Wicked Witch of the West before she was melted. They go into this China land, not China the country, but the material China, like China dishes. And actually, there's another movie, the only sequel to The Wizard of Oz, the only other film version I ever loved, called Oz the Great and Powerful, where they show some of the characters from this China land. I really appreciated that movie too. We'll talk about that some other time. But it's very, very different in the book. Much longer, and actually the movie was going to be much longer. They made some cuts, some within production, some scenes never made it into the movie, but a lot of the cuts they made after previewing the film, feeling it was too long. Let me talk about some of the cuts that were done. Some of them I think were good cuts, others were really bad cuts. First, on their way to capture the Wicked Witch after the Wizard of Oz tells them that's the only condition for which he will grant their wishes, the witch sends this bug called the Jitterbug, and it turns into this jazzy dance called the Jitterbug. The producers cut this scene because they felt that a jazz dance in the middle of a fantasy movie didn't make a whole lot of sense. I think that was a really good cut. But in preview, they cut something else. Have you noticed that this is supposed to be a musical, but the last song you hear is the lion singing "If Only I Were King of the Forest"? You could make a case that when you hear the soldiers singing going into the castle, that there's a little more music there. But actually, there was going to be a spectacular number right after she killed the Wicked Witch. If you watch it the way it is now, the soldiers who were working for the witch are actually glad she's dead, and they go, "Hail Dorothy, the Wicked Witch is dead," and then they suddenly cut back, and they're back with Oz again. You can already tell that something's missing. Well, what's missing was a reprise of the song "Ding Dong, the Witch is Dead," and another song joining it is kind of a medley, the song about the merry old Land of Oz. Now, that was shown in the preview. It was cut for time. That scene needed to be in the movie because it is a musical. It added balance. It added symmetry, but it was cut, and it's been lost. They couldn't restore it if they wanted to, not the original footage. Now, some of the footage survived because this film was reissued many times, and in one of the reissuing trailers that was shown in the theater, you see a few seconds sounds of this scene. There are also a lot of stills from it. The soundtrack survived. If you buy the soundtrack to The Wizard of Oz, you'll hear this number. With all they do with CGI today, I think they could take the photographs that they have, the little bit of film that they have, the soundtrack that they have, and I think they could almost 100% replicate what that was. It would be wonderful for them to do it. Now, there's another scene that was cut. This one was found. In this case, the footage is still good. They could have put it back in very easily. This is when Dorothy first meets the Scarecrow and he's singing If I Only Had a Brain. Well, that song is in the movie, but in the middle of the song, he broke into this incredible dance, and Ray Bolger, the actor, is a fantastic dancer. They found this scene, and there was a movie made called That's Dancing, one of the sequels to That's Entertainment, and they show there. Also, if you buy any DVD or Blu-ray of The Wizard of Oz, the deluxe set, they'll show it as a deleted scene. I found out doing some research that the studio seriously considered putting that back in the movie, but they decided not to. Their reason? They did not want to tamper with a classic. Well, normally I would call that a very good reason. God knows many classics have been tampered with, but here's my point. When that wonderful scene originally designed for the film was cut for the sake of time, they had already tampered with a potential classic. They should put that back in. They could always reissue both versions like Lucas does. He has the original Star Wars, and then he has the ones where he went back and changed the special effects. They could always do that, but that's a scene they could easily put back in the movie. They should. However, it did find a home in the film That's Dancing. Let me get back to the books as I conclude. The Wizard of Oz was the first of several books Frank Baum wrote. He was only going to write one, but they were so popular the public had an outcry for them. And finally, he started writing one Oz book a year. The second was called The Land of Oz. The first and the second are the only two I have read. They're both wonderful, but there's some 15 or 16 Oz books that he wrote. And then after he died, the publishers hired other writers. And I think there's over 30 Oz books that came out in that line. Anyway, because of the time of the year and because most people do consider it a Christmas movie, even though I don't, I thought I'd take advantage of this time of the year to comment on the fact that Christmas movie or not, it is indeed a classic. I won't tell you to go out and see it because I know you've already seen it. Who hasn't seen The Wizard of Oz? I love this movie. And what statement could be closer to making the obvious obvious?
Believe it or not, Bob Siegel is aware that there may be one or two people who disagree with his opinions. To offer your own comments on the topic at hand or to challenge Bob with a thought-provoking question, feel free to contact Bob on Facebook or questions@bobsiegel.net.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-aged child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
Welcome back to 1170 AM, 96.1 FM, The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel, and let me tell you who is joining me in the studio tonight, the woman who makes everybody's Christmas just a little bit merrier, but especially mine, since I wake up Christmas morning with her. Say hello to Dana Siegel.
Hello, I'm happy to be here tonight. Talk about these movies.
Yes, so now, Dana, as you know, and as anybody who's followed this show over the years knows, when it comes to Christmas time, I take some time off, and I have some annual Christmas specials that I repeat. One of them is on the history of Christmas. Another one, speaking of movies, which I already broached tonight with The Wizard of Oz, I have my top 10 holiday favorites of all time, and then some of the worst holiday movies ever made. And that one was repeated just a couple of weeks ago already here at KCBQ, and it will be repeated on my podcast about a week from now. So I'm not going to talk much about those movies right now, except it did occur to me that we've never heard your comments on these movies which you have to put up with me watching like five or six times a year. Even the ones
yes,
you like.
Yes, I can verify going, he does
you're
that.
Going to watch that again? I said it's like tinsel on the tree. It's like an ornament. So I'm not going to spend a lot of time on them because you can hear all the detail in that show, but I want to get Dana's reaction to them. And then there are some other holiday movies, just to update this a little bit and be new, that Dana and I both like. Some of them she likes more than me. Some of them I like more than her. But anyway, here's my top 10 list. It's a Wonderful Life, Miracle on 34th Street, Scrooge the Musical with Albert Finney, A Charlie Brown Christmas, How the Grinch Stole Christmas, the animated one, not that idiotic movie, A Christmas Story, The Santa Claus, and Breaking Form as one who hates sequels, The Santa Claus 2, Jingle All the Way with Arnold Schwarzenegger, and Home Alone. Okay, honey, your reaction to some of these movies that the audience hears my reaction to every year.
Yeah, and I can verify that Bob watches all of these and often will watch them multiple times. Also, there's at least one day where the Christmas Story movie is going 24 hours.
Oh, it's Christmas
hours.
Eve. Christmas Eve. They play it for 24
for
hours.
Joy. On Bob's list, that is the one that I definitely, you know, all the other ones
most
I
women
do
don't
enjoy.
Like, I found most women don't like that movie and a lot of guys like that movie. I think that's a male-female thing.
I do think so that, you know, the main character is a boy and what he goes through. And I just don't like how the dad behaves. I don't know. It's just not interesting to me at all. And so I can always hear it in the background. I know these movies so well that I can tell what's coming by just the music I'm hearing.
And when it's playing through the night, I'll just lay down on the couch and fall asleep.
Yes.
And throughout the night when I wake up, I know exactly where they are in the movie. I don't really have to be watching it with any continuity.
Yes. So I do like
now,
all
the
movies.
You love Scrooge the Musical. That's one
I
that
do.
I, of all the
I
ones on my list,
is,
I think you enjoy
I'm a
that
musical.
The most.
But I love musicals as well. Yeah. So, you know, you and I both have lots of musicals, not just Christmas musicals, but lots of musicals we do love together. So this list is fine. Bob will stick with that. If I had to make a top 10 list, I'm not sure what they'd be. I've never taken the time to sit down and do that. But I definitely can absolutely, without any doubt, say A Christmas Story would never,
would
ever
be
on my
list.
That's yeah. true. But I thought it would be kind of fun tonight to do something a little bit different and to do a little bit of trivia with these movies, because I know there are many people that watch these movies too and enjoy them as much as we do. And so I thought I would just do a few of them off of your top 10. So let's start with the Scrooge, the musical that you have here. But truly, that comes from a different story. The name of that original story is A Christmas Carol. It was originally a novella. And so what we're going to do tonight is a little trivia. I'm going to read a question to you, and then I'll give you some choices, and then you can write that down. Some of them are true, false. Some of them are pick a choice, that kind of thing. So if you want to get pencil and paper and just kind of have fun and keep track of how many you get right or how many you knew, you can do that. Also, you may want pencil and paper to write down some of the names of the movies we mentioned, because we've just discovered a few of them as
some newer
recently
ones, some
as
newer
2 weeks
ones, not the
ago.
Ones
we just
at,
found
yes.
one. So we're going to be naming some movies that are lesser known, but that we've enjoyed and had a good time with. So I think that would be kind of fun if they want to keep track of their... just whether they're accurate or not on these things. So let's start with A Christmas Carol. The first question is, who wrote this original novella? Was it Herman Melville, Mary Shelley, Charles Dickens, Henry James? And I know you know the answer, Bob. Who is the author?
You talk about making the obvious obvious. I'm sure everybody knows the answer. It is Charles Dickens.
It is Charles Dickens. In what city does the story take place?
It's in Gila Bend, Arizona. It takes place in Gila Bend, Arizona.
Okay, don't listen to him. He's trying to throw you off, folks. All right, so you can choose from New York, Boston, London, or Edinburgh. And so what city does the story take place in, Bob?
I'll take London for 12, Johnny.
That is correct. So if you chose London, not Arizona, that would be really good.
Very good.
Love that. Thank you.
That's great. Yeah, keep that going. That's great, Todd.
All right. There are many movie adaptations to this, and we have another question about that. But this story has been done over and over again, different forms. And so most of those adaptations still keep this story in the original time it was published. So what year was that? Was it 1820, 1843? 1901 or 1925. So it was at least
this one we're not exactly giving away, but it is 1843.
It is 1843. Many of the adaptations do go with that. However, as we have noticed on some of our rom-com channels, there are newer adaptations that are being done.
Oh, and just about every television series in history has done some version of this.
Yeah, and they are not in 1943. Yeah, yeah. Or 1843. So, yeah, that is different.
And they had the Mickey Mouse version and the Mr. Magoo version and the Fred Flintstone version.
Yes, and almost every family sitcom movie or sitcom TV show.
The Muppets, Christmas Carol, they did it.
Yes, and cartoons. Almost every one of them has done.
There's probably just hundreds and hundreds of versions of
this. So let's talk about that right now. Approximately how many film adaptations of The Christmas Story have been produced? 40, 60, 75, or more than 80?
More than 80.
Absolutely. More than 80. And
when you put in all the other adaptations for TV, I'd say it's probably more than 200.
Yes, I would think so. We did find a stat that said they had a database of over 100 in that one that we looked at earlier. So last question for A Christmas Carol for tonight. Which Star Trek actor played Scrooge in the 1999 TV version of this story? Was it Patrick Stewart, William Shatner, Leonard Nimoy, and Brent Spiner? Which one actually did that?
Well, even though Shatner would have liked to play the part, he did not. It was Patrick Stewart, and the reason I know this is he did a television movie, but he did the television movie based on the fact that for a couple of years he toured and did a one-man performance. He memorized the entire novella, did a one-man performance. Some friends of mine took me to the Spreckles Theater here in San Diego to see him. It was a thrill because I do live one-man performances of my place, and it said in the program that Charles Dickens, when he was alive, used to travel around the world and perform A Christmas Carol. Since Patrick Stewart was an excellent actor from England, watching him do it, I thought was the next best thing to
Absolutely.
Watching Charles Dickens
what
do it.
What a thrill.
All right. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show. This is Bob Siegel. With the wiring in your home, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. For all you know, he may have gotten his license by sending in 3 serial box tops.
Hey, these things happen. There's nothing wrong with my wiring. Houses burned down. You wanted a guarantee? You should have ordered the deluxe package.
Folks, play it smart. Call WNS Electric Incorporated. They specialize in contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, WNS takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I use them myself, and I wouldn't call anyone else. Call 619-447-8785. That's
877-877-877-8785 for WNS Electric, license number 480539. WNS Electric.
Looking for a book you won't be able to put down? Push the Winds Around is a romance set in the context of science fiction. Dr. Brandon Krieger is given the opportunity of a lifetime, a psychologist's dream. Through the usage of his physics professor friend's time machine, Brandon travels 20 years back through time in an attempt to change one man's destiny. Tom Kyle, a convicted and unremorseful murderer, is located in the past when he was a six-year-old boy. Brandon's mission? To alter Tom Kyle's path and prevent him from being a vicious killer. Matters are complicated when Brandon finds himself falling in love with young Tom's mother. Push the Winds Around, a novel by Bob Siegel. Available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
Run, run, Rudolph! Santa wants to make it in town. Santa, make him hurry, tell him he can take the freeway down. Run, run, Rudolph! Reeling like a merry-go-round.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. This is Dana Siegel, and Bob and I are talking tonight about Christmas movies. This is an update, an offshoot from Bob's Top 10 Christmas Movies. And before we went to the break, we were talking about The Christmas Carol and what a popular movie that is and how many adaptations have been made of that. And one of the things that we did want to share is that I have seen many adaptations of that in the rom-coms, and the rom-com is the later name or updated name for romantic comedies, which we used to say would be Hallmark. And I used to think that if you just say, hey, it was a Hallmark day, it meant you were just going to enjoy some movies and have a good time just relaxing. And the part that I always loved about Hallmarks was they had a happy ending. That's all. I just want to know it's going to turn out okay. Everybody's going to get something good. And then I can relax and watch the movie. And it doesn't mean that I don't enjoy movies. If I know ahead of time there's going to be a rough ending, but it's still a great story, I can enjoy it. In fact, Bob's so good at, he'll warn me. If he knows something, some movie is coming and he knows the ending, he'll say, it's not going to have a Hallmark ending, but it is a great story and you'll enjoy it. Then I'm ready.
It's usually a great story because it didn't have a Hallmark in it.
I know. So one of the things we did want to say is that we have switched from Hallmark. So I don't say, hey, it's a Hallmark day anymore. We have switched from watching Hallmarks as they started getting more and more political about the things they were doing. And also just, it's
well, there
not
was pressure put
values.
On them from the LGBTQ yes. community, and they now show guys making out. And yeah. Sorry, we're just not going to watch
One
that.
One of the things that I appreciated about the Hallmark movies, not only that they would have a happy ending, but I also appreciated the fact that they did have family values, that the shows did have. And for years,
and
that,
they would claim that these are family values, just different family
values. Well, what
values,
I but, call, consider a family value is if I have one of my grandchildren in the room with me and two men start having a relationship, I don't know how to a young child that's a hard thing to
but
explain.
But to the people that are explaining that to kids in school, they think
yes.
that's just and look,
yes,
look
I get that.
We live in a free country and you can believe anything you want about your sexuality. It's just that it works in reverse. We are entitled to have our opinion about it too. And it doesn't mean that Christians hate gays. Dana and I don't hate gays, but we don't feel obligated to watch movies that put this stuff in it. It's just that simple.
Yes, and I want to echo that too, because I do have friends and family that is their choice. And I love them. I enjoy them. But
the narrative today is that if you don't tolerate, you don't love. And that's just not true. You can love somebody and disagree
and I care
with
very
them
much,
about something.
I care very much for them. But I also, when I sit down to watch something, I want it to be something where I'm not going to be caught off guard.
And Hallmark originally didn't want to do this. They capitulated. There was pressure put. But now there's another channel that a lot of Hallmark writers and producers and actors have kind of migrated to. So tell them about
many
that.
Many of the Hallmark actors have moved over to Great American Family, which is a wonderful station. In fact, I didn't check on this before we came on the air, but the original president of Hallmark left Hallmark when all this pressure was coming and moved over to become the lead in the Great American Family.
And don't worry, folks. Great American Family is just as cheesy, just as predictable, just as formulaic as a Hallmark
movie.
They are.
And again, it's a Hallmark happy ending. Yes. So. I want to know that everybody's going to be okay at the end of the
movie.
Boy,
are they ever.
So, yeah. So Great American Family, we have switched over to them. We also have switched over to Up TV, and Up TV, their tagline is faith and family. And they're often on this channel have religious messages or just really touching things. So for me, that's where my heart is in just watching these really fun things. So we are going to do one more on your top 10 list, Bob. We're going to do a little trivia about Home Alone. So according to the Guinness Book of World Records, how much did Home Alone gross worldwide? Was it $350 million, $512 million, or $533 million? And if you chose $533 million, you were correct.
In fact, in its day, it was the highest grossing comedy movie of all time.
That's amazing.
Now, I like the movie. Obviously, I put it on my top 10 list. I don't know that it deserves the status of highest grossing comedy movie of all time, but it's a fun movie, particularly with Joe Pesci and Daniel Stern.
The actors in it are part of what
Well, not Macaulay Culkin so much, but the other actors
in it. I actually think he's really good. I know. I think he made a perfect Kevin. And Kevin is who he played, the young 8-year-old boy that gets left at home alone. And so let's do a little test of your trivia here. What does Kevin go to see Santa for, and what does he ask for? Does he ask for peace on earth, a safe trip for his family, protection from the burglars, or a return of his family? And I know you know this one, Bob.
It's a return of his family.
Yes, because they've gone off to travel and he has been left home alone. Next one, the film's composer has written some of the most recognizable music in film history. Who is the composer? Is it Hans Zimmer, James Horner, John Williams, Henry Mancini?
Well, much as I love all of those composers, this is John Williams, who also wrote Star Wars, Superman, Indiana Jones, you name it. Hook, he's written beautiful music.
Yeah, so it does have good, which I do enjoy.
Oh, and the song Somewhere in My Memory, I think, is one of the most beautiful Christmas carols ever written, and that was written by John Williams for this movie.
That it is a beautiful soundtrack. So I'm going to now just share a couple of facts about it because these are so interesting. There is one point where one of the burglars has the brother's tarantula on his face. And you see him screaming. You hear this blood-curdling scream while you're seeing this tarantula on his face.
Which is probably about as blood-curdling as any of us would do in that circumstance.
Yes, and so what they share in this trivia thing is that Daniel Stern, the actor, actually had to mime that scream when the tarantula was on his face because a real scream would have scared the spider, and so the sound had to be dubbed in afterwards. Can you imagine?
Yeah, well, no amount of money. They couldn't have paid me $1 million to allow them to put that tarantula on me. Okay, you're listening to The Bob Siegel Show with Dana Siegel. We'll be right back.
Looking for a church that will not only challenge you, but help you to feel like a part of a family? Why not try Skyline Church, located in Rancho San Diego near 94 in Hamishaw? I can testify firsthand to Skyline because I myself am a member. When you visit, tell them Bob Siegel sent you and ask about that free week-long trip to Bermuda for first-time visitors. They'll look at you like they don't know what you're talking about, and you will not, in fact, get any free trip to Bermuda. But you'll still be glad for a chance to experience Skyline Church. You don't want to go to Bermuda anyway. Too hot. And people who approach that area have been known to disappear.
but they don't disappear at Skyline. Those who visit usually can't wait to come back.
Skyline Church.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show, our theme, Christianity and its relationship to politics and pop culture version. Today, I'm here with my wife, Dana. We're talking about Christian films and Christmas trivia.
Yes. And we're going to go on and in this segment talk about, we're going to leave your top 10 list and go to some other fun ones. These are all ones that I know aren't top 10, but we do find value in them and enjoy. They are entertaining. Fred Claus.
Which was an okay movie. I'd have to give it a mixed review, but all in all, I found it enjoyable.
Well, and it kind of makes fun of the dynamics of family members and so on.
Yeah, Fred Claus is Santa Claus's older brother, and he never gets the attention. There is one scene, even if it was the only scene you watch, where he goes to this kind of like an AA meeting, but it's for neglected brothers. And there's the brother of Bill Clinton in there, and there's the brother of Sylvester Stallone, and it's played by the real brothers, Alec Baldwin's brothers in there. Scene alone was worth this movie.
And the whole premise of this is that he's left the family, basically, and is off just doing regular work. But his brother, who's been Santa all these years, needs his help. And he has to go back and rejoin. And he ends up actually saving Christmas, helping his brother out when his brother wasn't able, and restoring his relationship with his family, his girlfriend, everything. So it's just, and the actors in it, there's just a lineup of hilarious actors in it. So it's a good one. Jack Frost. This one's very different.
Okay, yeah. Not great, but it wasn't without its charm. I barely enjoyed it, I guess I would say.
And this one is, the father is killed in a car accident.
Michael Keaton was the star. He's a good actor.
And then he does come back as a snowman, and they have time together. He has time with the son to reconcile some things.
It's obviously not as funny as you would expect a Michael Keaton movie to be. But it did have a lot of serious overtones to it.
It did, and then there is humor and some comedy in it.
Not a lot.
But it is more about a father-son relationship and the importance of that, and that he had missed that. And so now he was getting a chance to try to make that happen. So it was...
By the way, that was Vince Vaughn that starred in Fred Claus.
Yes.
You were talking about the all-star cast. Vince Vaughn was...
And several others.
Yeah. Paul Giamatti was Santa Claus. Yeah.
Yes. So that was a good one. So Jack Frost is a very different kind of Christmas movie. It's not a totally happy ending for me, but it is the only ending that could be. And so it goes on, if in fact anybody could actually become a snowman. Okay, now Christmas with the Cranks. I really do like this one, and I'm not exactly sure why.
It's entertaining because Tim Allen is always hilarious, but it is so stupidly predictable. In fact, when I saw it previewed, where they're saying, oh, they're canceling Christmas because their daughter isn't going to be home for Christmas, I'm going, oh, don't tell me. She decides to come home after all. And then they got a script. Well, not only did I figure it out, but in the preview, they showed you that anyway, because they think you're too stupid. They think if you don't see the whole story. However, Tim Allen is so funny in this. Dan Aykroyd.
He really is.
I do enjoy watching it. I'd be hard pressed to call it a good movie, but I do enjoy watching it. So what can I tell you? That's my mixed review.
We'll go with that. And also, we don't particularly enjoy Elf.
I had that on my top two worst Christmas. And I know I'm alone. Everybody hates me because I don't like Elf. But you can listen to the rebroadcast of my top 10 and my worst two.
Yes.
And Elf was one of my worst two.
And we're going to have one trivia question from Elf.
Oh, well, that's about all it deserves.
The elves in Elf try to stick to the four main food groups. What are they? Are they gumdrops, lollipops, licorice and gum, candy, candy canes, candy corn and syrup, or pizza, sandwiches, ice cream, and candy?
It was the second one on
it
there.
It was. Everything is candy, candy canes, candy corn, and syrup. And he makes a big
now,
deal
the
about
movie
putting this together.
Had one good thing. Bob Newhart was in it, and he was hilarious like he always is. But he wasn't in enough of it to save the movie.
Yes. So now let's switch to movies that we have found in the last couple of years that we have enjoyed.
So we've given you our mixed reviews. These are the ones we really like a lot more.
Yes. And they're not on the top 10, but they're still.
They're newer ones that we've recently discovered, and we really like them.
And so I think the one that you really enjoy is the Christmas Chronicles 1 and 2 with Kurt Russell and Goldie
Russell
Hawn.
Kurt Russell and Goldie Hawn. He's a very different kind of
very
Santa Claus.
Different.
In fact, he's a thinner Santa Claus, and he's tired of the image of being overweight. And great gadgetry, great special effects, really interesting story. And they made a sequel, and in the sequel, there really was a new story to tell. They didn't retread the old one. You can find that on Netflix, and I think you might find it a new Christmas favorite, The Christmas Chronicles.
We did enjoy it, and again,
very
you
much.
Can tell we watch Christmas movies a lot,
oh,
and
yeah.
We both were pleasantly surprised at how interesting these were, and I found that there were several things in the movies about the magic of Santa and how he does things and what he can do that answers some of the questions I think we have as kids in our minds about how does Santa do this or that. It's very, very clever. It's really cute, and so we've enjoyed that. So that is on Netflix if you're interested in that. And that came out a couple of years ago. The next one, we just found this a couple of days ago. It's a 2023 from Prime, Candy Cane Lane
with Eddie Murphy. It was very quirky and very different and pretty funny too.
It was very funny and
beautiful to watch and great special effects. Not a huge Eddie Murphy fan, but I was very pleasantly surprised.
And it did have some kind of outrageous characters in it.
Yeah,
the Pentatonix are in it.
Which is an excellent acapella singing group.
Yeah, so it was just very out there, super interesting. Another one in that group, we found this a couple of years ago, was Jingle Jangle. A Christmas Journey came out in 2020. I believe it is on Netflix as well. And it has, again, some more famous actors in it, but visually, it is something else to watch. Just the toy shop, the invention shop, and just what goes on and the magic in it. It's just really I was really surprised at what a great story it was. So Jingle Jangle, A Christmas Journey back from 1920, if you're interested in that. So those are, I think, some of our more recent ones.
Okay, I think we have a few more and some more trivia coming up. So you're listening to The Bob Siegel Show. This is Bob Siegel. As you can see, I am very critical of the arts. I love to talk about books, television shows, movies, and, as you are witnessing, I have a special passion for Christmas movies, because I have a special passion for Christmas itself. Well, what happens when a Christmas story critic writes a Christmas story of his own? Here's your chance to find out. My children's novel, The Dangerous Christmas Ornament, is available on Amazon.com. So far, the customer reviews on Amazon have been terrific. But don't take my word for it. Go to Amazon and find out for yourself. Read the reviews, read the book, and if you also like the book, maybe consider writing your own customer review. And if you don't like the book, never mind. It's okay. You don't have to write anything. Sheesh, everybody thinks he's a critic. The Dangerous Christmas Ornament on Amazon.com and also on BarnesandNoble.com. This is Bob Siegel. As a Christian apologist, I hear scorning and ridicule all the time from Bible skeptics and unbelievers. Some churches will still respond to such people with love and understanding. Others
do not.
You Christians are such morons. There's no proof that God exists, and only a pea brain would believe in miracles. Wake up! Step into the 21st century. Besides, Christianity is responsible for most of the world's problems.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
Relax, my friends. That's not the kind of response you'll get from Skyline Church. We welcome you just as you are, with all your doubts, all your questions, and all your concerns. Your problems with religion are understandable, and I promise at Skyline you'll experience the love of Jesus Christ, not the revenge of a Sith Lord.
Skyline Church.
The sequel to The Dangerous Christmas Ornament is called Inside the Castle in the Glass, and already this entertaining sequel is getting great reviews from customers on Amazon.com. Reviews such as this one. Very clever way of introducing certain life principles in a fictional setting. I thoroughly enjoyed the story. Here's another review. I picked up this book at a book signing with Bob Siegel on a Friday. By Monday morning before work, I finished it. This is over 500 pages of story. I couldn't put it down. I would plan to put it down at the end of the chapter, then something big would take place. I would have to continue to see what happened. A lot of unexpected twists and turns and a lot of things you can't imagine. Things that make you say, "What?" By the way, I am pushing 60 years old and I enjoyed this book and look forward to more of Bob's books. Keep them coming. Inside the Castle in the Glass, available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com. Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show, and we are going to carry on with some of our movie trivia. This is a very old, animated, famous Christmas program, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. So, two questions about Rudolph. The creator of Rudolph character is Robert L. May, and he was given the challenge of creating a Christmas story for a department store. Was it Macy's, Saks Fifth Avenue, or Montgomery Ward?
It was Montgomery Ward, and it was originally a coloring book so that the kids would have something to do while their parents shopped. And then somebody took the story from the coloring book, wrote the song, and then the song became this big breakout hit.
And what a brilliant thing to do to entertain the kids while the parents are shopping. I am so surprised that tradition didn't carry on over the years.
A lot of the stories of how Christmas traditions developed over the years are very interesting.
Yes, that was brilliant for them to do that. So, you mentioned the songwriter. The songwriter, John Marks, took May's poem and put it to music, but he was also related to him. Were they father and son, cousins, or brother-in-laws?
I do not know the answer to this one. I knew that it was a coloring book turned into a song, but I do not know about their relationship.
They were actually brother-in-laws.
Wow.
So his brother-in-law is the one that made the song. So very cool. All right, let's carry on. We are going to give you a couple more very new movies or shows, and then one that is very, very old that is fascinating. I did not know about it until just a couple of days ago when Bob introduced it to me. But let's start with The Santa Clauses, the TV series, which is
a spin-off. Yeah, so they made three movies. And I liked the first two. Dana liked all three, but now it's a...
And these all have Tim Allen in them.
They've shown them the last 2 years. There's been two seasons of it, and there's six episodes apiece. They're both on Disney Plus. Are they good? How do they compare with the movie? Well, each season when it started was really slow. The kid actors are horrible, but the kid actors in the movies were really good. I kind of watched them, and I feel like, boy, they should have just stopped with the movies. They should have quit while they're ahead. However, there are times we find ourselves laughing, and the stories get better as the season goes on. So I suppose this qualifies as another mixed review. What did you think about it, sweetheart?
I agree with the kids.
They're horrible.
I think they're directed to be the way they are, which
I think
not
they're
their
the director's
fault.
Kids or the producer's kids, and that's the only way they got in.
I don't know. They're just really not believable. They're over the top.
And the kids in the movies were so good. So
real.
We're not against kid actors. It's just that, boy, these are the worst.
It doesn't work as well as it did in the Santa Claus movies. And these two six-episode seasons came out last year and this year.
Yeah.
And this year, we almost didn't finish it because we watched 1, 2, and 3 and thought, and we even said like on 3, should we just watch it and get it over with? Because you keep thinking it's going to get better, but it did.
And then by the last three, they finally did pick up.
Yes, by episode 4, it did lock in, and 6 tied it all up and so on. So if I were to give them any kind of recommendation, I would not. They were doing a lot of flashbacks at the beginning, but those flashbacks didn't make sense until the very end. So I think they were trying to be real artsy and creative, but it didn't work because it was confusing.
I'll say
viewer.
This. They're complex stories. I'll give them
yes,
that.
Yes. Oh, most definitely.
I think with better kid actors, it might have been better. But all Perhaps. In all, they should have just quit with the movies.
That may be true. The one we just went to see in the theaters was Journey to Bethlehem. And we went being a little skeptical. We didn't know. We were trying to online. It's kind of vague about what it doesn't say a whole lot. It is called an epic musical. And it just came out this month. And now it is already on Prime to rent or buy. So you can see it. It left the theaters last week and now it's out. So talk to us about Journey to Bethlehem.
Well, and like I said at the top of the show, I love musicals. The musical numbers in this don't match that period, of
Not
course.
At all.
But of course, that's
but
a
true. Good.
That's a tradition they started with Joseph in the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat with Andrew Lloyd Webber. So I'll give them that. I thought the dopiest part of the movie was when Mary, the Virgin Mary, she wanted to be a rabbi. She wanted to be a career woman. Now, look, I believe
she wanted to be a teacher.
A teacher.
Yes,
okay.
Yes.
Look, I believe in career woman. My wife, Dana, is
a
wonderful.
I'm a teacher, so I thought, oh, that's
okay,
cool.
Okay. And that's wonderful because we've progressed since then. But in that culture, is it possible that there might have been one or two women that were saying, come, only the men can be rabbis. Anything's possible, but it's not very likely. In that culture, women didn't think in those terms. So that just seemed obligatory and politically correct. Having said that, it was fun. It was entertaining. When somebody's making a movie about Christianity, you kind of go in there thinking, okay, how bad is it going to be? It could have been a lot worse. Probably Dana enjoyed it a little more than I did. I would say it could have been worse than it was.
Well, and it wasn't outrageously against scripture other than those things. And they were very clear to say they took creative liberty with this. And so on. They are Christians that wrote it. It's a husband and wife team that wrote it. And the wife wrote the music. I did think the music was great.
It was good. The it's just that it didn't fit that
choreography was great.
Period.
The voices were the actors.
Well,
were
and the danger from King Herod
voices.
That was trying to kill all the children, you got much more of a sense of that danger in this movie, which I thought was good. That did make it more
Antonio
dramatic.
Antonio Banderas played that part.
Yes, he was very good in that part. Yeah,
he really was. So go into it knowing it's got some creative liberties, but I found it quite good. And Bob just was able to point out the areas where scripturally those
well,
would have been
just
sound
that
things.
One area mostly.
Yeah. And then let's finish on Yes, Virginia, There Is a Santa Claus. This was amazing.
Okay, this was a movie made for television. It came out like in the 80s, I think. It had Edward Asner and Charles Bronson and Richard Thomas from the Waltons. Very well acted, very intriguing, and it's loosely based on a true story. There was a little girl named Virginia that wrote this paper, The Sun.
New York Sun.
The New York
newspaper.
Sun, and asked, does Santa Claus really exist? And the editorial that came back answering her question was beautifully written. And it's the kind of thing where even if you don't believe in Santa Claus, he was really saying, was yes, so, Santa exists. Yes. But it was more like the spirit of Santa Claus, the kindness around Christmas time. Yes. Anyway, honey, we're running out of time here. But
well, and I do think that was good. It's on television right now. And it was originally from 1897. And they are now continuing to show that. And there have been lots of versions. So it was really a touching movie. It's cool that it's still going 100 years later.
Yeah.
That story
yeah.
Is
Check out that movie.
On. Yeah.
All right. And everybody have a Merry Christmas.
The Bob Siegel Show is sponsored in part by the law offices of Matthew Simone.